here at home, 2-2, in a highly competitive series. And there really hasn't been much difference between the two teams. It's been a lot of the force areas, the effort areas. We happen to win them in game 4 and game 1. They won them in game 2 and game 3, and the result was the same. You know, it coincided with those effort areas. So both teams understand what the keys to the series is, and that's why it's so competitive and physical. And both teams will be trying to take control of those areas tomorrow night.
Like I said, when we defend, we attack the basket, we get to the free throw line, we score in the paint, we're a pretty good team. You know, for us, our rebounding opponent has always been a key of ours. It's always something that we want to do and we want to continue to do.
It feels great. Obviously, the moves that you make, become more and more dangerous, even a little late. Because you're going offensively and then defense moves there. It's something that is undescribable in a sense, and it's something that you really want to understand, because at times the rim seems so small, like the size of a Cheerio. You can't get the ball in it at all, and then other times it just opens up like the ocean.
This is the latest edition of the Hot at Hoops podcast. We're joined by fellow writers Diego and Menelik, that is joining us, is one of the writers from Peninsula Ismail. We've joined forces on the site, and now we're joining forces on the podcast. What's going on, guys?
Good. What's going on, guys?
It's going well.
Much better than it was maybe a couple days ago, right?
Yeah. That was a big turnaround by the Heat. I mean, it was an obvious must win, but it's pretty obvious that it seems every game now is a must win. So
that's how it is in the playoffs, and especially now with Bosch out, the Heat needed huge contributions from LeBron and Wade. It looked kind of dicey there at halftime, but I don't know what Wade did. I don't know if he took Flintstone vitamins. I don't know what happened, but the Wade of old came back. And and they got a timely contribution from Haslam. Somebody had to sort of reproduce what Bosch does, but Haslam does all those little things, but he came through with several big time baskets.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I think that Wade really got going. I think it was in the last minute of the second quarter when Bron basically gave Wade that really nice bounce pass, and then Wade had that nice dunk over Tyler Hansbrough. I think that really got him going. I think he did have that little jawing episode with Danny Granger. I don't know why he stepped in after Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, Granger's just trying to be a tough guy now. Granger's like, I saw a couple NBA player tweets, and they were like, they were kind of disappointed because they could kind of seem like it was a little transparent that Danny maybe just sort of overexerting himself, to try to really... Yeah, because he wasn't even in the play, and I don't think Wade meant any harm. He was just trying to say, get off my hand, so, yeah.
And, Granger was also in, a couple of instances where he was jawing at Bron in games 2 and 3. And, in game 3, he just kind of grabbed his jersey. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if I've seen him do that.
They go back, though. They actually go back. They've had problems in previous years, too, because Granger's he's gotten into it with LeBron. He's gotten into it with Paul Pierce. I don't know if you guys remember four years ago. I remember Granger got his teeth stomped out because I think Pierce had they went for a loose ball, and he just sort of, fell on top of his head, and he lost, just jammed his teeth out.
Wow.
And we also have Lance Stevenson as well chiming in. So
I wouldn't recognize him from any other person.
Well, Juwan Howard checked them pretty well in the pregame, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that. I saw it was like surveillance footage almost.
I think Bron actually said in the off day between game three and four, you know, he said basically, who, Lance Stephenson? I'm not even going to give him the time. It was basically kind of, you know, what he said about Deshaun Stephenson when he was in Cleveland, you know, that'd be like Jay-Z responding, something that that Soulja Boy said. So I think it was just, you know, in line with that. But apparently Juwan Howard had an issue with it.
You know, yo, Diego, I remember you had said something about you thought the key play, you know, for Wade's resurgence. And I think, and even Wade spoke about it, LeBron, they talked about it, the backdoor cut you were saying, and, you know, he passed it to him. I actually thought, when I was watching the game, I actually thought the key trigger to Wade's sort of resurgence, in my opinion, was when, I think it was in the second quarter before that, there was he stole the ball. He was in the post, he missed the fadeaway, then Udonis Haslem had a dunk. And then Wade, he just anticipated the inbound pass, stole it, then had a nice dazzling behind-the-back pass to LeBron. And I kind of felt like that was vintage Wade. That's like, that's what we know Wade as, you know, get in the passing lane, get the steals, risk your butt. You know what I mean? Flash was – I thought that was interesting because when he did that, the team, you know, it was a nice little, like, spark. LeBron got excited because, you know, it was a highlight play. And I thought that might have been maybe the key that segued to the other important back cut that he had.
Yeah.
That helped, and I think Hibbert getting into foul trouble helped too, because he was a monster especially in the first quarter. The Heat were definitely trying to penetrate, and it kind of wasn't really going nowhere because you kind of saw that Wade from the game before where he was missing baskets, and his presence, Hibbert's presence, was altering shots. Sometimes he was blocking them, sometimes it was just his presence. So once that was removed, I think it was like the second unit. Then they were starting to the second unit of the Pacers came in. The Heat started attacking. They kept on going at it. And I had written about that before, about one of the keys to the game. Just forget about the three-pointers. If it's there, if it's in the flow of the game, that's fine. But I really didn't like just how the over-reliance on that in game three. Just way too many three-pointers. And but it worked out this game because Shane had one to start the game off, and then Wade as well, out of nowhere, just drained one. I'm like, okay, well, I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah,
they're struggling. I mean, yeah, you're right about that. I mean, LeBron is 1 for 11 from three. Chalmers, their best shooter, is 3 for 11. They're not, you know, Battier 2 for 12. Yeah, I mean,
Jones as well. He's not really giving you much.
0 for 7, either. Yeah. I mean, it's
0 for 1 on dunks as well.
Yeah, I don't know what. I mean, that was hilarious to watch James Jones. I've never seen him get that high in his life.
Yeah.
Never will again, probably.
Well, what do you guys feel about, and this is what I found a little bit concerning, was just the fact that, you know, It was a historic, remarkable performance, but Miami can't expect Wade and LeBron to continuously play. You know, it's, I mean, they're amazing, and obviously they're superstars, and LeBron is, you know, the MVP, right? It's just, you know, it's a little concerning somewhat to think that they have to play that well, you know, and carry their team without Bosh, because, you know, unless other guys step up, you know, unless someone else replicates what Haslem did, or, you know, they're going to be in some trouble.
You can only hope that maybe Chalmers has a bounce-back game, because he has played well, but, of course, You fully expect him to not have good games. So I think you just hope to at least have Haslem, Chalmers, Miller, or Shane each contribute 7 or 8 points. At least a few of them have to do something like that. Or, you know, best case scenario, one of them hits double digits. That's the only way, because you can't expect them to combine for 70 points.
Right. Yeah. And it's...
And as far as what I think about that, I mean, what I think is when you look at this series, in the two games the Heat have won, Bron has grabbed, I think it was 15 in game one and then 18 in game four. I think that's something to keep your eye on. But, I mean, you can look at game two and say that was a time when both teams weren't really playing well. The Heat almost won that game. Maybe if the Pacers aren't hitting their shots in game five, then you might not need to have such spectacular games out of those two players. But I do agree that those two players will have to do the heavy lifting. And hopefully, you know, as you mentioned, that Haslam gave them a big boost, and hopefully they'll get some more timely contributions from those other players. But the load is going to be on those two players.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just think it's going to be very taxing on their bodies. We all know LeBron is a superhuman freak in terms of his ability to, you know, to withstand, you know, game endurance and his conditioning. I mean, he's, you know, we don't even know how he does it. But Wade, on the other hand, you know, he's banged up. You know, he had his knee drained. You know, they're saying that was kind of attributed, they believe why it was attributed why he was kind of, you know, ineffective in, what was it, game three. Mm-hmm. So you just have to wonder, you know, about health and energy going forward, because it's going to be a lot of, like you said, they're going to have to carry the load significantly.
Yeah, and one thing, I mean, maybe, Surya, you were at the Heat practice, so maybe you can talk about this, but I thought it was kind of a good sign that Spo didn't rule out that Bosch could be back for a game seven if that's necessary. I mean, I thought that, you know, maybe he wouldn't be available until possibly the finals if he could get there. But if he's going to be there for the next round possibly, then I think that's a good sign. And then you basically just tell your big two guns, and especially Bron, you know, you've been doing well. Just do this for one game at home and then try to close out in game six. And then you'll have Chris Bosh back. And then some of that load will be taken off of your shoulders.
I think the good thing about Wade and LeBron is that they can be facilitators, they can be playmakers. Unlike a player like Kobe, that fourth quarter, I couldn't believe all these bad shots he was taking instead of, you know, trying to get Bynum and Gasol involved in the game. And that's what made LeBron's night so special yesterday as well. Because yeah, I mean, of course, all those points were needed. But he was getting other players involved. He makes mm-hmm. some great passes to Wade, of course. He also got Haslam too, some nice looks where Haslam is comfortable. So you don't expect somebody like Joel Anthony to create his own shot. But, you know, around the rim, if you give him a decent pass, you don't throw him, you know, a bullet pass either. You know, let's not go crazy here. But just, you know, make the play. And give it to one of those role players, and they can score. You can get them involved. They're not going to score maybe 15, 20 like Bosch can, but those kind of points, you can at least keep pace with Indiana, and then you expect in the fourth quarter for LeBron and or Wade to take the team to the top. I think that would be a realistic scenario instead of what we saw in game four.
Yeah, I think in one of the closing minutes of game four, Wade, did his usual pick and roll, and then he found Joel on a bounce pass. He kind of did mishandle it for a second, but at least he got fouled and made two free throws. I mean, that was a big 2 points right there. I mean,
big free throws, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Joel has been better this season at catching the ball and finishing around the rim, you know, within normal expectations. You don't expect too much from him, but he has gotten better. I would say that he has gotten better. He's not that much of a liability around the rim.
No, he's playing well, no question. Yeah. I mean, you know, but again, he's undersized. I mean, he's about the same height as LeBron. You know, he's not as strong.
6'9", yeah.
You know, but he's him and Udonis Haslam are doing the dirty work, no question. I mean, their front line is pretty depleted, so it puts so much pressure on Joel and UD and LeBron at times. But the other thing to factor into is that Indiana didn't play too smart in that game. I mean, if you go back to, you know, and this is what was, you know, they were being heavily criticized for afterwards. They stopped really going inside to West, and, you know, Hibbert was, well, he was plagued by foul trouble, but maybe Frank Vogel had some questionable substitution patterns. He kind of held him out longer than people expected. But it's just going to be interesting to see how they respond because, you know, they're big down there. They're, you know, West is a really strong guy, and I just fear that, you know, if they play right, it's going to be very tough because, you know, they're going to have to, you know, really, really, you know, fight down there. And I'm just bringing up the health because I just, you know, if LeBron is preoccupied, you know, playing at the four here and there and having to deal with West and having to, you know, deal with all those guys down there, you know, when Lewis Adamson comes in there, I remember he gave UD a shot right to the forehead. That was pretty vicious. That guy has been known to be a rough guy. I remember he got into a fight with Zach Randolph when he was on the Clippers. But, you know, it's just going to be tough. And I just, you know, I just hope that those guys can withstand the challenge physically, because it's going to, you know, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up on that, I think it was after game two that Braun said that playing down low in the four guarding West was, quote, taxing, unquote. So I think since in those two games in the Pacers' house, you've seen Battier take more of that role, and he's, right, you know, and he's giving up, what, 40 pounds to West, but he's still guarding West for the vast majority of the time. I mean, sometimes Ron will switch on him, but I think that that's been something key, that Battier has been guarding West, and if Haslam can continue to play well to get those minutes that he got in game four, he can guard West, and then James can basically just guard Danny Granger or Paul George and not have to worry about banging down low.
No, that's a good point, but that's what he was criticized for. They criticized Frank Vogel for saying, why would you not go to West, and you have, you know, if you have Shane Battier guarding him? You know, that was the whole thing. They were saying, you know, he can't guard David West. He's too strong and too big for him. But yeah, I agree, you're right. That strategy is definitely beneficial to LeBron. You don't want him down there exerting all his energy and, you know.
And you could also point to how Vogel went to George Hill over Collison in the fourth quarter, when it was Collison who really made a couple of really big buckets that got that lead to two or 1 point.
Right.
And you know, and then he takes him out of the game. But I thought that he was really outplaying George Hill in that game.
Yeah, I know. I think we were all wondering, where the hell did this come from Darren Collison? Because he's just, all of a sudden, he's looking. I remember in the first round of the playoffs, he had the highest PER rating. I mean, I remember of all, you know, first round series, of all stats, of all, Darren Collison was ranked number one. And then there was a joke about that said, yeah, okay, this is, we know something's up. Yeah, he's playing very well. I mean, he's emerging. Maybe he didn't take too well to his benching for Georgia. I don't know, but he's playing phenomenal.
Well, I think with the Pacers on paper, that, you know, they have a lot of talent, but and you have players like Hill and Barbosa that have, you know, some playoff experience with their old teams. But how much of a factor do you think is that this playoff experience that the Heat have, even a young coach like Spoelstra has, but not necessarily the main guys like Hibbert or even Vogel have. I mean, second round of the playoffs is, you know, new territory for them. I don't know how they're going to respond tomorrow in Miami, facing, you know, the Heat have momentum again, but, you know, that can change in one game. But can the Pacers, you know, mentally fight back and get into the series again?
That's a good question.
I mean, as far as me, I think both teams should really look at Game 5 as a must-win, because if they don't win Game 5, then they have to win to stave off elimination in Indiana, and then you have to win Game 7 on their home court. But if you win Game 5, if you're the Pacers, then you're in a position to close it out at home. But if you're, you know, just flip the script, and if you're Miami, if you win Game 5, then you're in that position to win a playoff series on the road, which is something that they couldn't do last series against New York. Maybe they've grown. I think you've seen, you know, even in the last year's playoffs, they couldn't close out Philly on the road, but then they closed out the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals on a crazy comeback. But I think, you know, Game 5 is going to be a hugely important game. We know that the history that when the series is tied at 2-2, the team that wins Game 5 usually wins the series. So I think we'll see a pretty good game. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, which I think is what it came down to in Games 1, 2, and 4. And we'll see who comes out on top.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, Siri, you know, yeah, and to build off that, I mean, I think LeBron said it best in the post-game interview. It's going to be a dogfight, you know. I don't really think it matters about, you know, which team has more veteran experience. Because at this point, I mean, Indiana made it to the playoffs last year. You're right, Miami has more experience in terms of their veteran leadership. Shane Battier, you know, UD, obviously LeBron and Wade and those guys, and Spo being around, even under Pat Riley. But at this point, it's just about the game of basketball. You know, you just go out there and you play. You know, when it gets to this stage, and everybody's, you know, they know Miami. Miami knows Indiana. They've played four times now, you know, so they're starting to dislike each other even more. You know, that's how these series end up being. You know, you got the coaches are starting to figure out people's X and O's. And I just think it's going to come down to execution. You know, that's usually how it plays out. So, you know, and does the ball go into the basket? You know, hopefully Wade can continue to ride this momentum, you know, because he was in a hole. Hopefully his knee responds well. It's been a couple of days now, so they said that, you know, he's more comfortable. Looks like he got his legs back. And you know LeBron's going to bring it. I mean, I think at this point, I think LeBron is very – he's Mr. Consistent. He's not – you know, he's gonna get rebounds. He's gonna pass the ball well. He's going to score. He's going to defend. He's, you know, he's very consistent. He's going to bring it pretty much every game. I think the variable is Wade just because of his health, you know. He's not as healthy as LeBron is. He's older and he's – you know, he's just not as that durable. But I think Wade, if he can, you know, continue to play at the level we expect him to play, they should win this game, you know, because, you know, those guys can't guard, you know, they can't keep up, and especially in the high pick and roll that they were running there because, you know, both LeBron and Wade are so good. And, you know, you mentioned about being unselfish. You're right. They're both so unselfish that when they run high pick and rolls and they come off screens, they're so good at finding the open man that I think, you know, it'll be too much for the Pacers.
Yeah, and I think just to, you know, go back to Wade, I think the key with Wade is, I mean, even in those two games in Miami, he wasn't really playing up to his potential. He was shooting 8 for 23 and then 8 for 22, I think it was. And, you know, people were talking about him, you know, maybe being bothered by Paul George's long arms. But, you know, I think we've seen, you know, D. Wade basically take someone with a little bit longer arms in Tayshaun Prince against the Pistons back in 05 and 06 and really, you know, get his way against that guy who was at that time a very good defensive player. So I think I do think that Wade will have another big game in game 5, and I expect the Heat to win game 5 and then close out the series in 6 games.
What's going on with Mike Miller? You guys, I mean, it just seems like his every part of his body is hurting.
I mean, you know, it's so frustrating to me because, you know, this is the one thing I don't understand about these athletes, you know, and I'm not trying to criticize athletes, but if you look at the NBA or even in most professional sports, the same guys always get re-injured, you know? It's the same guys from year to year with the same nagging injuries or the same – and you have to question their conditioning and their workout routines because – you know, Mike Miller's banged up every single year. I mean, before he even came to the, you know, to the Heat when he was on the Wizards, and he just. So to answer your question, I really don't know. But are you surprised? You know, are you surprised that he's hurt? Because he's been hurt his whole career.
Yeah.
But who can step up from the bench? Who do you think can have that kind of a breakout performance? I mean, you've seen Norris Cole. I didn't even think he was going to be playing much in the playoffs. He's been given, you know, a few minutes here and there. Can he have a sort of Collison-type performance? I mean, who do you guys think can realistically give the Heat, you know, a decent performance on both ends of the floor?
Do you want to take that one?
I was just going to say, in all honesty, I don't think anybody on Miami's team can do the kind of things that Darren Collison or some of those bench players can. It's just I don't think their personnel is equipped for that, you know, because Collison, that kid's pretty good, you know. I mean, he's – you know, he was a good college player. I mean, George Hill was an experienced San Antonio. But you're talking about bench players primarily. I mean, look at Barbosa. I mean, if Miami had Barbosa, you know, just take a guy like him. Just put him on the Miami Heat team. You know, he could easily get 10 or 12 points a game, right? I mean, he's so fast, such a good driver, you know. I just think that Miami doesn't have that kind of personnel. I think that they have knockdown shooters that just aren't making shots, you know, like Mike Miller, James Jones, Mario Chalmers, Shane Bettig. Those guys really – well, Chalmers, we've seen him. He can do a little bit more than – he's probably the best guy that you're referring to as someone to step up. But outside of him, you know, they don't have a lot of those explosive off-the-dribble guys, you know. They just – that's the only unfortunate part.
Yeah, it's a shame that I think the player that got away that – I don't know if the Heat could have gotten him or not, was Boris Diaw, because he got waived by the Bobcats. Spurs took him. Kenny Martin as well. Clippers
yeah,
got him.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of players that could have made a huge difference on the bench. Not complaining with Ronnie. I mean, he's a great cheerleader off the bench. but he's a great teammate. I guess we'll have to see what the Heat can do, I guess, with the mid-level exception to see if there's reinforcements that can come. But for now, they're kind of stuck with what they have.
Who do you think, though? I mean, who do you think? You think anybody? I mean, I think only Chalmers. Can you think of anybody on that team that, you know, can provide some sort of, you know, value off the bench or, you know, role-playing help like that?
Well, as far as me, I think that Miller, I mean, I think he's really banged up. I mean, I think you saw when he went to the bench and then had to lie on the ground. I mean, he's just not right. I think that it'd be a little bit wishful thinking to think that he could contribute in this series or even do a whole lot. I mean, he did find Wade for a nice backdoor pass for a dunk in the fourth quarter, but I don't think that he's going to contribute all that much this year, and I think that at the end of the year, you're going to see some maybe consideration from Pat Riley and others about maybe amnestying him, although the Heat are already in the luxury tax. They won't really get out of it if they do amnesty him, but maybe they do just because he hasn't really lived up to the contract that he was signed to in 2010. But as far as to answer your question, I think that Chalmers, Haslam, and then maybe if Shane Battier can hit some shots, I think those are the three key guys. We've seen Mario Chalmers step up in Game 3, then Haslam in Game 4. I think that those two guys should really show up, and you know, you'd hope that Haslam has his jump shot in the next game. I mean, he hasn't really shot it well the entire year, but hopefully he can sort of build off those, you know, four baskets in the fourth quarter of Game 4. Those were really crucial baskets, and hopefully make those shots. And then you'd hope that Chalmers can maybe get in the lane and make some baskets. He was making some floaters in Game 3, and hopefully he'll make that sort of have a bounce-back game from his Game 4. I mean, in one instance, I think he shot a wide-open three-pointer off the backboard, so he really needs to show up. And I think if Shane Battier can just make some of his corner shots, and if you get contributions out of those three players and your two superstars are holding down the fort, I think the Heat should be in good position to win the game.
If you're Spoelstra, and I know that Jones isn't as a complete player as Miller, but considering how Miller has been so banged up, and even though Jones has struggled with the shot, would you give him more minutes just to see if the consistent minutes, like Haslam in the last game, if you give this player consistent minutes, and hopefully that his shot comes back, because you know we all know how deadly he can be beyond the arc.
I mean, that's a very tough call, because I agree. You know, it's pretty much, you know, you're going to go with comfortability, consistency, or, you know, rhythm versus health. And, you know, Miller's used to getting more minutes, you know, around this time. And even last year, you know, we saw Jones was out the rotation. It was, you know, Miller pretty much, because the Heat would go big. You know, well, they would go Mike Miller, LeBron, and Wade, and LeBron would play the point, which is kind of what Spo likes to do. But, I mean, like you said, if Miller's just banged up, I think you should give Jones some more minutes. I mean, he was a three-point champion last year. You know, I mean, it just all takes, just like with Wade, you know, the ball has to go in once. He's 0-for-7 from downtown, but if he just gets one to go through, you know, maybe he can really, you know, Jones is the kind of player, you know, he could hit 4 to 5 to 6 threes if he gets really hot. You know, we've seen it before even this season. So I would say give him a chance, you know.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And I think people sometimes forget that in the second round against Boston, Miller still wasn't really healthy. I think he only really started to get those minutes and sort of kind of pushed James Jones out of the rotation completely in that third round series against the Bulls. That was when he really showed up. But I think James Jones, I think it was in Game 1 of that Miami-Boston series, he had 20 points off the bench. That was huge. And then I think it was in Game 5, the closeout game of that series, I think he made a three, and then Bosch had a dunk before Bron just made a couple of huge threes right in Paul Pierce's face. So I think if he's good enough to, you know, get solid minutes and really contribute against the Boston Celtics team last year, I think he's good enough to get some minutes and get some playing time against the Indiana Pacers this time. But I would say that one thing that I've noticed, it's pretty much been a common theme in all four of these games that we've seen so far, is that Mike Miller has guarded Barbosa on a lot of defensive times in this playoff series, and he's really been easily just taken off the dribble for some easy buckets. So I don't think you would put a guy like Miller or Jones, who are pretty, you know, slow footed, on a player like Leandro Barbosa. But maybe if you put him on somebody who's, you know, not that athletic, then I think you'll be able to get by.
And that's a good point. I mean, I just want to touch on that really quickly about your not only is health a factor on offense, but on defense considerably. I mean, I remember we saw some blown assignments in the last game, and I saw Wade really getting frustrated because there were some low, you know, help defense was low, closeouts were low, and Indiana just missed a bunch of threes. But if those threes start going in, they can make threes, and they're not a bad shooting team. So, you know, I think at this point you got to go with health, you know, because if you're going to need people to close out, need people to recover, need people to help out on defense, switch back. So, you know, I just think health is just, to me, health is the denominator of this whole series, clearly. And I just think, you know, you got to go with who's playing at the, you know, with the most efficiency at the same time, who's healthy enough to give you 100% out there.
All right, guys, final question. How do you see the series playing out? Heat in six or seven? Or Pacers?
I think Heat in six.
So they're just taking the next two straight?
Yeah.
All right.
What do you think? I'll let you go first because I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would assume that the Heat would take the next game. Game six would be tough. I could see that game, you know, maybe going into overtime, something like that. That could be kind of like a fake game seven type of scenario where it would just. I think that he could take the next two. If not, I definitely see the Heat in seven. So I don't have a straight up answer for that. Heat in six and a half.
Yeah, no, you know, I agree. I think predicting games is a little overrated sometimes, like series outcomes. Because
that's fun.
You know, it is fun. But I like a lot of times, you know, it could be five really competitive games. I mean, look at that Laker Thunder series. It could be 3-1 right now. But
yeah.
You know, but I agree that I think Miami wins the series either in six or seven. And if I had to lean towards something, I might say seven, just because I think, agreeing with you, that game six would be pretty intense. And I think it would be very close. But, either way. But I do think Miami wins the series and in the end.
All right. Well, this is another edition of the Hot Out Hoops podcast, postseason edition. Thanks, guys, for joining me. And, let's see what happens tomorrow and game six. No matter what, there's going to be a game six in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And we'll take it from there.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, sir.
All right, guys. Later.
Take care.